Off the Ball.
GAA.
And any team that has David Clifford, you know, has another chance of winning. You know, I wouldn't have said Zermatt were at a back-to-back level, but they're answering all the questions. They're ticking all the boxes.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in Mike Hanke, and I suppose they're good at football. They just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12. I love playing 10. I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No!
Thank you for all the supporters. Thank you for the team. Thank you, France. Merci, la France. Merci, les baguettes. Merci, les croissants. Je vous aime. I love you.
Hello, hello, good morning and happy Thursday. We're recording a bit earlier today, it's like 12, so for all you regular Word on the Street listeners, you'll get our weekly pod a little bit earlier this week. And if you're new here, Word on the Street is basically a podcast where every week we take a sporting topic, something that's dominating the headlines, and we take it out to the public, and then we see what they talk, see what they think, see what they say, and see what voice notes they send in, really. So right now, it is the start of Strawberries... Pims, sitting on the hill. It is Wimbledon season. So this is episode 10 and we're calling it Breaking Point. So guys, how do we feel about Wimbledon? It is one of my favourite times of year.
Well, I've got my tennis themed cardigan on today. Yeah, this is actually my mom's shout out. I love it. Yeah, love it. It's just great. I probably watched it more when I was younger. You know, reminds me of just, you hear everyone talking school holidays, sunny, you know, closing the curtains so you can watch
everyone
it.
Everyone keeps saying that, closing the curtains. What's that about?
I think it just feels,
the glare from the sun on the telly, you need to, like, if you need to concentrate on a tennis match, it's like, okay, this is getting hardcore. We close the curtains.
That's so interesting. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, it just feels a bit alien to be inside during the day on the summer holidays with the curtains closed as well. But, yeah, just losing hours of your day to watching it.
Yeah.
It's definitely my favourite Grand Slam. I think I've had arguments with my mother about this because she is a huge tennis fan. I think she prefers Roland Garros. She loves the French Open and the clay courts and everything, which I do. I love that. But I think something about Wimbledon and the allure of it and the all white outfits and the strawberries and the cream and everything. I'd love to go. You've been.
Oh, I went last year and I am a huge fan of many sports. Tennis wouldn't be up there as my number one, but it was 100% the best sporting event I've ever been to. There's no doubt. Everyone who goes says this and nobody can put a finger on why. Like, I was reading Conor Nyland's, I think everyone knows who he is these days. He's Ireland's most successful tennis player. He was up in the 120s at one point a couple of years ago.
The low hundreds, which is really good.
Yeah, really good. And he was at Wimbledon twice.
The 2010-11 times, early 2010s.
Yeah, but he was basically saying there's just a magic about it that nobody can understand until you're there. And there really is. The buzz about the place and maybe the bouginess of it all, it makes you feel like you're part of something special, I think.
Like the Royal Box. Love seeing who's in the Royal Box. So far this week we've had, and it's just the mix of people.
Yeah.
You have John Cena, Olivia Rodrigo, Kate Blanchett, and Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
It is interesting the amount of celebrities who are tennis fans. Like, I don't know if they're huge tennis fans or they're just Wimbledon fans, but like...
I think it's probably more of a status thing to be seen at Wimbledon, isn't it?
The same as like the Monaco Grand Prix or when you see people go to like European Cup finals and everything.
But you'd have to somewhat enjoy tennis to sit there for 4 or 5 hours.
But you don't have to enjoy tennis to sit in a very comfortable seat and have champagne for 4 hours. So I think there's it's probably
Pims,
a little bit of
Pims.
Both. Pims.
Yes,
were
true.
Were you on centre? Did you watch a match there?
I was. So I had a great day. I got tickets through a friend here whose dad is a member of Wimbledon. He's one of the only Irish people who's a member of Wimbledon. His name is John, but I think John O'Brien. I don't know why he's a member, but anyway. So she got us member access tickets, which means you don't have tickets to Centre Court, but you do get access to the members' bar and the like area where you can eat. It's not free food or anything, but it's just a really nice area. And we were in there and my whole aim for the day was to chat to somebody and get us tickets into Centre Court. I was like, this is where all my years of talking come into play. My diplomacy skills. I have one job and one job only here at Wimbledon. So about 6 hours into the day, I started talking to a lovely old lady called Margaret. Her husband was a member of Wimbledon. So they come every year and they come every day. They drove up from somewhere in the Cotswolds, somewhere lovely, I'm sure.
Wow.
Yeah, she's a very lucky lady. And she was chatting to me, and she basically goes, oh, we're leaving now. Do you want my ticket? And I was like, no, you're kidding. I didn't think it would be that easy to do. And she was like, yeah, we're going to go home for dinner. We'll be back tomorrow.
Oh, that's amazing.
Meanwhile, Djokovic, Novak Djokovic, was two sets in on center court. And I was like, you have to be joking me. And she was like, no, I love your enthusiasm. Here you go. So me and my boyfriend, we sprinted into center court and caught, maybe he was one set in at that time. He won in straight sets, but we caught the last two sets of the game. It was incredible.
That's amazing. You really wore her down.
Yeah. Well, she didn't need much wearing down. She was so nice. My Instagram post after that was, here's to Margaret Slay Queen.
Aw.
She deserved it.
Because I've been to Wimbledon, but I've done like the tour of the grounds.
Oh.
So you get a lot of access, and you get the museum and everything, and you see center court, but it's empty. And I was there, I think, in the June bank holiday weekend, like 2012, so years and years ago. And they were like just preparing the grass for Wimbledon, and it was so precise and so beautiful. You nearly felt like you couldn't like sit down. Mm. You're looking at it and it felt like it was a sacred thing. To see a match there must be, yeah.
It's incredible. World. And I was talking to Kevin Quinn, the CEO of Tennis Ireland, and he was telling us a little bit about how it's not just the spectators at the event who enjoy it, but also the spectators at home here.
Our research shows that there's 1.5 million fans of tennis on the island, but that peaks to over nearly 2.5 million, particularly when the Grand Slams are on. And that's driven by the fact that it becomes part of, I suppose, the general sports narrative in Ireland. If you think general media, newspapers, radio, 99% of the coverage of sport in Ireland is driven through the GAA, through soccer and rugby, so the big three field sports. Tennis, independent research shows tennis has been the fourth most popular alongside golf in Ireland. But really, because we don't have many international tournaments, and as I said earlier, we're bringing back a lot of those. So the Irish Open's back on the 27th of July, and also you have the Davis Cup back on the 13th, 14th of September. Those events cut through and give us exposure and awareness for the sport. But without those, you can see that the Grand Slams, and in particularly Wimbledon, because it's just part of our, I suppose, almost part of the Irish psyche, isn't it? We've all grown up either watching it on our tellies with the curtains closed in the front room of our house, or we know the noise, the sound, the ball hitting the rackets, and that unique sound in terms of tennis. So, you know, that's where it peaks up, and it not only peaks up in terms of media coverage, but then that's why it helps become part of that narrative. And you can see the peaking of over 2 million people interested or following, in terms of, as we are these couple of weeks for Wimbledon, or, you know, what, 4 weeks ago with the French Open.
So that's mad. Like, it's not just a buzz around Wimbledon in the place, as we know there is, but in Ireland as well, where people don't necessarily tune in. I mean, he said there's excitement around all the Grand Slams, but people don't necessarily tune into all of them. I mean, would you tune into every single one, or would it just be Wimbledon?
It used just to be Wimbledon. And then when I was in Australia, I went to the Aussie Open. And much like my Formula One comments, like, I went and I wasn't like a huge fan of the sport before I went, but the Aussie Open had the opposite effect. It like turned me into a tennis fan. Mm. It was just such a good spectacle, such a great atmosphere. Probably similar enough to Wimbledon, you know, maybe less of the prestige and the all whites, but it's the height of the summer. That converted me then. So now I tune in to all the
Grand Slams.
All the Grand Slams, yeah.
Because I feel like Irish people need a secondary reason to get into tennis. Like, for, you know, if you're British, there's a lot of British tennis players you can root for. Whereas for Irish people, it's like, oh, I grew up with watching Wimbledon, or I went to a tournament and I fell in love with it, or I played tennis in school and that's why I watch it. We don't have that sort of historical culture to kind of feed off that a lot of other countries, I suppose, do. So there's kind of myriad reasons why people are drawn to Grand Slam tennis, and then Wimbledon in particular.
Although an Irish lady did win Wimbledon once.
Oh, yeah.
As I keep liking to point out. What was her name? I have it written down somewhere.
Lena Rice.
Lena Rice in 1890.
An Irish man won it the same year.
Really?
Yeah.
God, what a year for Irish tennis.
Yeah.
We peaked way too early.
Yeah. Oh, God. And that is what we're going to be discussing across this pod, is why is it that, you know, I think it's something like 1/5 of the Irish population, watch tennis. That spikes at Wimbledon. But so few of us play it, and even less of us play it at that professional level.
which is unusual, sort of considering if you were to name, like, off the top of your head, the biggest sports in the country. Obviously, GAA, we're the best at that. Well done, Ireland. You know, rugby, football, golf, athletics, swimming. We have such an international presence in all of those, especially in recent years. And it's crickets, really, from tennis. Ironically, even cricket, we are doing a lot better than we used to. You know, was it the West Indies the Irish team bet a few weeks ago? You know, that would not historically have been a sport we play here. And yet we're succeeding at that. And we're not seeing that pathway in tennis.
Is it, I know you have written down here about role models. Is that the problem? I mean, 1890 is an incredibly long time ago to have had an Irish person win Wimbledon. Then we obviously had Conan Ireland, who was incredible in terms of what he achieved, especially considering how hard it is to go up the ranks in tennis. And I know we're going to talk about that later. But there hasn't been anybody really that an Irish kid can look up to and go, wow, look at the success they're having in tennis. I want to be able to do that.
Yeah, and I've a friend from home who, his name is Owen, and he played tennis all throughout his childhood. And he was kind of mentioning to me that this is a kind of a self-repeating and cyclical argument. This is what he said.
It's kind of a circular argument to say, well, we haven't had any success in it, so there's been no, or we haven't had big success in it, so there's no real inspiration for the younger generation to join and to, you know, be inspired to play tennis and to win something. But sure, that's just a circular argument, you know, where that's the chicken and the egg. You need someone big to have won, but sure, you're not going to have someone big to win if you don't have people playing in the first place.
I think it's interesting the way Kevin Quinn mentioned that golf and tennis are probably both on the same level there in terms of popularity in Ireland, but you see the likes of Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry and Paul Dunne, and you do have someone to look up to. I don't know what that argument, like, soccer players, Eve, this is probably more your realm. Obviously, we have Irish stars and Irish soccer players, but most of the time when you see kids going around, they're wearing jerseys with Mbappe or Messi on it. Like, they're looking at those international stars. And obviously, we have them in Ireland as well, but they don't seem to idolise them as much as global superstars. Like, why isn't Serena and Venus Williams, why aren't they enough of
an inspiration?
Like, why does it have to be an Irish person?
That's actually a great point, because even growing up, like, I watched a huge amount of tennis and it was because of Federer. Like, it didn't make me want to be him, but I did play and I wanted to play tennis at a high level. Like, obviously I was never going to be a professional before somebody picks up on me. But I did watch because of him. He was enough of an inspiration for me. I never felt like I needed an Irish player.
Yeah, but does it go back to that, you know, the women's sports slogan, like, can't see, can't be? Like, do we really need Irish role models for us to say, oh, I can do that?
Yeah, no? It's a very modern take on it, because I think 50 years ago, people did need Irish role models, because, or maybe more than 50, because they didn't have the same access to those global superstars. But now with TikTok and even commercially with the jerseys, like you were talking about, you can fully buy into somebody who's not necessarily from your country.
I feel like nearly more than kind of seeing people as inspirations and role models, what having a successful Irish sports person can do is sort of giving back to a very local level, say, to a community. Mm. Like, if you think right now, I don't know, the most successful, probably the biggest Irish footballer, or one of the biggest Irish footballers we've ever had, is Roy Keane. And you look at the amount of footballing talent that's come from Cork alone, kind of in recent years, that's kind of proof that kind of that inspiration does breed success. But yeah, at the same time, I've never really thought of that before, but I think you're right. In such a globalised world now, it doesn't matter as much as kind of, that's not the main reason we're not succeeding at tennis.
Yeah,
although, are many, many more reasons.
Yeah, true, which we're going to get into. But I also think you can't deny that it creates a buzz around a sport.
It does, yeah.
Like Katie Taylor. Kelly Harrington, Katie Taylor in the boxing. But then also even Alex Dunn in the F1 recently. Yeah. Maybe you're not, you know, as you said in the F1, you're not going to go and want to be an F1 driver, maybe. But you are going to read a little bit more about F1. And you are going to watch a few more highlights. And there's just a general buzz in the media. And that was something that Kevin spoke about in his earlier clip, that, you know, Wimbledon, suddenly the Irish media tune in, whereas for other Grand Slams, it's not the same.
I think the difference maybe is that a sport can become very popular with Irish kind of kids looking up to international stars. But for maybe Ireland to develop professional players in whatever sport, that's maybe when you need your Katie Taylors and your Rashida Adeleke's and your Rory McIlroy's to show that it can be done. And you can do it if you're from, you know, the back arse of nowhere, comma, Down or Donegal or Clara.
Comma.
Yeah. You know, I think there is a, you know, there's a slight disparity there.
Yeah. Either way, that's a very good point and one that we would love to hear the public's opinion on, because I'm actually not, you've left me confuzzled.
Lost for words.
Yes,
no
lost
words
for
in
words.
The street. No words in the street today.
But what we do know is that cost is certainly something that's impacting tennis in Ireland.
I think when we put this out to the public online, the most responses, this is the most I've ever got responses for a topic. We were asking, why aren't Irish people playing tennis at that professional level? And most of the comments did centre around both the cost of playing tennis and sort of this preconceived notion surrounding it. So James on Instagram said, in answer to why aren't Irish people tennis players, he said, we're not bourgeois enough. It's the one sport to still maintain its upper class credentials. Golf has people from Clara playing it now. It's truly allowing working class people in. Tennis, however, they're not there just yet. Ella on Instagram, it's for posh people. Brie on Instagram, in my town, tennis is always considered an upper class sport.
Yeah, bizarre. We were talking about this just before we came on air. Like, it feels like that's not the case, but it does certainly seem that that's what everybody thinks.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, because you would say tennis is probably an upper class sport, but you'd say the same with golf. But is it because now we're seeing, back to the role model point, we're seeing role models like Shane Lowry, that it's being taken out of that category of an upper class sport?
It's kind of become more global in that way. I mean, I would still consider rugby to be an incredibly upper class sport. We didn't play rugby in my school. You know, moving to Dublin, it's like, oh, right, you all played rugby, cool. And yet at the same time, there's people are so much more willing to watch and then play rugby kind of casually. Whereas, yeah, so many responses for the tennis question was almost seeming like, I'm not even going to start because of this notion or this preconceived idea.
Yeah, but is that all it is? Just like a complete misconception that you see the likes of Wimbledon, which just looks so posh, you know, strawberries and cream and Pims and white, and you just assume.
And David Beckham.
And David Beckham. That you can't play that. It's like just looking at golf and saying, look at Augusta.
But yeah, see, that's what I don't understand, why people in the comments are saying that golf is so much cheaper and so much more accessible. Because in reality, you look at golf and it looks really expensive as well. And they're all kitted out and, you know, it's very bougie, I would say. And tennis, yes, at a high level, it's bougie as well. But, you know, our concrete courts in the back arse of Ballymoney down in Gorey, like, they're not bougie. You can walk out there and play in whatever you want, just with your old kid racket. Like, there's such a difference in level, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like, historically in Ireland, yes, it was an upper class sport. It was the landed gentry. It was the Anglo-Irish, you know, it was very much an upper class sport. But I feel like nowadays, I mean, I played a lot of tennis last kind of autumn with a few of my friends from college, and there was free courts in Ringsend, so we just trekked down there kind of once or twice a week and play, and it did feel incredibly accessible, because you're not paying any money to kind of do that. And I had my old tennis racket from home. But I suppose what the difference is that I'm not intending to become a professional tennis player.
Yeah, do you think that's what it is? It's just a hang-up on how we used to conceive tennis.
Yeah, I mean, I probably have preconceived notions about rugby. I probably have preconceived notions about golf. You know, so they're there, of course.
I want to listen to this clip from Kevin Quinn again anyway, because he kind of talks about how there is that notion that people think tennis clubs are really expensive to join, but actually, in fact, they're not.
is that there does seem to be incorrectly the idea that joining a tennis club is expensive. It's absolutely not. It's the vast, vast majority of tennis clubs will be significantly cheaper than your GAA club. But for whatever reason, there is this perception out there that it's really expensive. Obviously, there are clubs that are expensive, like there are in every sport, you know, because the facilities they may have, the scale, the size they may have, their location, if they're in a city versus if they're in the country or in town, the demand means that expensive. But if you take other individual sports, take golf, for example, like tennis membership is way cheaper than golf.
See, that's like, and he actually, well, I hope he's true. He's speaking facts. But I believe him when he says, I think we just have this. It was me who brought it up on the call. I said, you know, I play tennis socially because he was asking me, do I play? I love it, but I would never join a club because firstly, you can't get in because there's massive waiting lists. Secondly, it's really expensive. And he was just kind of like, well, actually, that's not true. And I just think it's really weird that we have that preconceived notion that it is really expensive, but in actual fact, your rugby clubs, your GAA clubs, everything that you pay to play is a similar cost.
Yeah. Does it come down to like facilities then, you know, as opposed to costs? When we're saying you're watching these stairs, you go out, if it's soccer, you just have to kick a ball around yourself. Do you know, GAA, it's easy to...
You just need grass,
yeah, which we've plenty of in Ireland.
But no grass courts, apparently.
No, like, I mean, I was asking my mother about this and she would have grown up playing tennis, but like against the side of her house, like there was no facilities. And she said there are not enough tennis courts and definitely not enough indoor courts. Good luck waiting for a fine day here for tennis.
not enough, none yet. So they're building four indoor courts in Dundalk on the old abandoned Dundalk Bulls ice hockey rink. So they should be open this summer. And I think that's like a real move in progress towards like tennis of the future in Ireland. And it doesn't matter if it's raining, we can train 365 days.
I did read that Cork doesn't have a single indoor tennis court. Can you confirm or deny?
Can't confirm or deny that, no.
It came from a reliable source, so I do believe it. And apparently Ireland only had 60 indoor tennis courts in 2022 and they were almost all in Dublin. Now that figure has gone up slightly, but not a lot. And if you just compare that briefly to Belgium, another really small country, 1,365 indoor courts. Finland has 500, Norway has 216. So I really think weather, yes, you can blame it on the weather, but it's not enough of a factor. Like, we should have better facilities to deal with that.
Yeah, and not even the fact that they're indoor courts. We had a voice note from a listener who played tennis at like a pretty high level, and she mentioned that even the surface of the courts in Ireland is a problem.
A big contributing factor as to why we don't have as many Irish professional tennis players on the circuit would probably be due to our facilities in Ireland. So obviously, due to Ireland being quite a wet climate country, the predominant court surface that you see in tennis clubs would be artificial grass. And this artificial grass is really not a replica of what you play on if you're on the European or the international circuit, as the predominant court surface would be clay or hard courts, but due to the rain, clay and hard courts aren't going to absorb the water as well as the artificial grass. But I know from playing on the circuit as a junior across Europe, if I was training on artificial grass all year round and I was about to start the tour or the circuit, I'd have to go out 2 weeks early to actually get used to the clay court surface or the hard court, because the ball bounces completely different. The way your body moves on these courts is completely different to how it does on the artificial grass. So I definitely think that is one huge contributing factor, because you'll see that a lot of the really good Irish juniors, they kind of decide then to head away to a camp abroad with that's in Barcelona or even the States when they're 13 or 14.
So it leads back into the money issue, needing to go over to Europe 2 weeks before just to get used to the grass and clay courts, and also the prospect of having to go to the likes of the States or Barcelona to just to get those right facilities. So maybe at a grassroots level, it needs to be built up.
Yeah, like Andy Murray went to Spain too when he was like 15. I feel like, again, I agree with all these points in singular like levels, but I just think they're not enough to explain what the heck is going on. And I don't have the answers, but I just think like the UK faces very similar issues with us in terms of whether, yes, they have a lot more money and probably more courts, but still like their top players are leaving the country. So I don't know.
Yeah, we had a comment from Thomas on Instagram that I found very interesting. He said, thriving grassroots tennis landscape across the country. There's a multitude of clubs, some of them multi-surface, a few with indoor courts, lots of regional leagues, development squads, etc. The problem lies with elite structures. To succeed in tennis, you need money and expertise, and in Ireland, we don't have enough of both. That I found interesting because I suppose with the facilities that we have, you can maybe get to a certain level, and I assume that's pretty much the same in the UK, but you're going to have to go abroad if you want to succeed in a professional sense. And we're seeing that across the board. We're seeing that in athletics. We're seeing that in swimming. They're all going to America. You know, college tennis is huge in America. And I just, it's unfortunate, really, that there doesn't seem to be a set out development platform.
There is now.
There is. It's it's coming.
No, it's here. Apparently, according to Kevin Quinn, but it's only for junior tennis.
Mm.
They have the National Development Programme, I believe that's what it's called. National Performance Development Programme, aimed at nurturing top junior tennis players in Ireland. So basically they'll get, you know, a coaching team, strength and conditioning coaches, individualised performance, like feedback. And then they also get sports psychology sessions, which is really important from a tennis point of view. And it's actually resulted, he was telling me today, in the most junior players ever in Ireland. They've also got more junior tournaments than ever before. So they now have up to 17 junior tournaments in Ireland, which I do think that's really important because, as he was saying, you know, these kids are young. They get to play at home, sleep in their own bed, have their coach by their side instead of having to travel to the UK. Like in Conor Nyland's book, he had to travel to the UK every couple of weeks.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you haven't read that book, get on it. Yeah, it's incredible.
Oh, it's the best, one of the best sporting books I've ever read, actually.
Yeah, it just paints such a tough, cruel picture of the tennis landscape outside that top 50.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, going back to Owen Roach, who had played tennis growing up, there wasn't this system. And I think that's what he found quite isolating about playing tennis growing up in Ireland.
And like there were a few competitions that were organised by the club back home, and they were good fun, but no one my age would have been playing. They were all, you know, in their 30s, 40s, 50s maybe even. So there was, at least in my experience in playing tennis, there wasn't really a big young community. I don't know, there was no retention of the few people my age who did play. There was no retention. I don't know if there's really any sort of a system, and if there is, you know, we never saw it. I was never interacted with it, but I don't know if there's any sort of a system to kind of try and progress young talent in tennis. Yeah, I'm really not sure if there even is one. Which, if there is probably a bad sign.
Yeah, that's interesting that he said it's a bad sign if there is one and he doesn't know about it. Because that's, like, as I said, as Kevin was telling me this morning, there is one. But maybe it's, like, again, it goes down to that exposure thing. If people don't know, they will not pick up a racket and think, I can make it as a tennis player, because they don't know where they can go. Which is a problem in itself, I suppose.
I think especially as well, kind of tying this into Conor Nyland's book, with how precarious professional tennis is, like, unless you are in the top 80, you're not making a livable wage.
Yeah.
You know, especially with the travelling you have to do. Like, Kevin Quinn, again, what a man, Kevin Quinn, was giving us so much information.
Oh, he's the nicest person I've ever spoken to. CEO.
Yes, but he had a really interesting kind of comments on the professional circuit.
We would have about eight men on the ATP tour. We would have one woman on the WTA in terms of they ranking ranges from about 1,200 down to the 400s, right? Mm-hmm. So in terms of breaking though from the 400s or even into the 300s, 200s, 100s is exceptionally difficult. Mm. You know, at the professional level is, in my view, it's very badly imbalanced towards those at the very top. The order of magnitude of winnings for those probably in the top 80 or so of the sport versus those anywhere below that is, as I said, in my view, badly weighted.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, you get that from Conor's book again, just how difficult it is to climb up the ranks. And he
well,
also
what's the difference between that and how difficult it is to climb up the ranks in golf? I assume it's the same across the board in any professional setup, athletics.
Can you have more of a wild card into golf, though? This is my question. I think that's what's really difficult about tennis, is that if you're in the UK, like your man Ollie, who played Alcaraz yesterday, and he's in college in the US, he's a British kid, he got a random wild card, he's only ranked like 700 and something in the world. He just won £99,000 for winning his first round at Wimbledon. If you're an Irish kid ranked, I mean, we have people ranked in the 200s, 300s, 400s, 500s, there's just no way of even breaking into that world.
I mean, if you look at golf, think of how many tournaments happen in Ireland. You know, like the Irish Open, the women's is this week. Portrush is soon. There is just opportunities that aren't there.
Yeah, so it's actually specifically Irish tennis players that find it more difficult rather than just tennis players across the board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I do think it's in general, but I think tennis players from those big countries that hold a Grand Slam are automatically at an advantage because they can have that breakthrough without needing to be in the top 100, 150.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then suddenly they get a chance that Irish kids may never get. On that golf point, yeah, the Women's Irish Open is on right now. Apparently there's more players in that than, like, more Irish female players in that than there ever has been before, just because we have an event and we can provide them with that platform. Yeah. But here's hoping. We have the Irish Open, it came back last year. The Davis Cup came back last year. So we are moving in the right direction with tennis. Remains to be seen if we'll ever get a player at Wimbledon.
See, I think we spent all this time asking, you know, why can't we do what the UK do? They have the same climate as us, they have the same this and the same that, but I guess the difference is that they have Wimbledon. It's in their culture.
Absolutely.
And we don't have one yet, but we're close to it, and Irish people love it. So hopefully now, with everything that's happening with Tennis Ireland, you know, we're making small steps.
Yeah. Any last word in the studio?
Yeah, I think we just need to break the stigma about tennis being inaccessible.
Yeah, I agree. Pick up a racket. Let's play. It's Wimbledon season. Anyway, we will be back next week with another raring topic to talk to you all about. See you next.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in Mike Hankey, and I suppose they're good at football. They just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12, I love playing 10. I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No!
Thank you for all the supporters. Thank you for the team. Thank you, France. Merci la France. Merci les baguettes. Merci les croissants. Je vous aime. I love you.